work in progress. The basic idea appeared already on the web, but also I would like to tell you some cosmological consequences and implications of this idea that are yet to appear. So it is traditionally assumed that any modification of gravity in the infrared should bring in at least a new mass parameter. Just because the new mass parameter is going to tell you what is the scale, the length scale at which this modification will be effective. This is not necessarily the case. I'm going to take GR, the very from GR as an example of this, and I'm deliberately mimicking GR in the rest of my seminar. As an example of a theory that doesn't contain any more mass parameter than Newtonian gravity, but it does realize a new theoretical framework. What is new here and a bit counterintuitive perhaps is that the modification, so gravity is modified in the infrared because the very metric manifold structure of space-time it breaks down at large scales. But at scales comparable to the cubature. As an invitation, let me be provocative and question an extremely well-established paradigm, which is that gravity can be described together with the matter fields and on the same foot of the other matter fields by an action of this type. Now, it is very widely believed that this theory can be trusted up to its semi-classical or low energy effective limit. And it is also believed that the only problem with this theory is its UV completion, for which there are many alternative candidate solutions. Very interesting. Now, this is not completely true. So there are a few difficulties that arise with this theory already at the semi-classical low energy level. And I'm going to argue that these difficulties are completely UV insensitive. You can change your physics in the UV as much as you want, but you're going to keep these difficulties. And it is not therefore surprising that any candidate theory of quantum gravity cannot really address completely at least. As far as I know, any of these difficulties. So the first is the main subject of this conference, the cosmological constant problem, that as Cliff pointed out in his talk, it is really related. It is really a low energy problem. It already appears at the level of the low energy. The other one is a black hole information paradox. So you want to trust this theory? Great. So already at the semi-classical limit, you quantize fields on a black hole background, and they're going to produce particles. These particles radiate at infinity, and at the end, you go from a pure state to a mixed state. Then I put also cosmology as a trouble for this theory. Now, it is true that there are cosmological models that fit extremely well our observations within this framework. Although these explanations do not come completely without a cost, you have to assume that there are two periods of accelerated expansion, and you have to introduce fields that have negative pressure in order to produce this accelerating expansion. Especially for dark energy, you need an amazing amount of fine tuning. So. Okay, so we are so stuck with this idea here that the picture that everyone here probably has about the universe is that it really underwent two periods of accelerated expansion. Now, perhaps if you want to be more radical and really try to open an eye on more structural deviations from this theory. So the hope is that what I'm going to propose can address some of these. And these are addressed in a quite drastic way, as you can see. So the idea is that let's consider this as a small length approximation. Okay, so We want to consider this theory valid, but only in the small scale limit. Now, I find it very compelling in general, the idea of not introducing any new mass parameter. So again, GR, as I will discuss later, it can be considered as a breakdown of non-gravitational physics, except that this breakdown happens at the scale of the curvature, which is a very dynamical parameter. So I'm going to use the scale of the curvature to modify this. And this also nicely relates to the acceleration of the universe, because there are many ways to see the acceleration of the universe. You can see it as something that is happening at some time and kicks in at some time, and then you will need a mass scale extremely small, 10 to the minus 3 electron volt, etc. But you can also see it as something that is just happening very far away from us. So again, any object at redshift of order 1 is as far from us as Hubble as the curvature. So more precisely, I'm going to start with the usual framework of semi-classical gravity. So I'm never going to talk about the dynamics of the gravitational field. So we will start from a three-man Robinson work background on top of which there are your quantized fields. And I'm going to modify the metal field operator, so the Fourier mode in the infrared. Now, this effective, so modification of the field operators have been attempted many times in the infraviolet, where people are usually perhaps more inclined to accept a breakdown of the metric manifold description. Now, I'm going to tell them in the infrared. So the manifold description will break down in the infrared. Now, what I'm saying is that the universe as a whole will have still a very well-defined quantum system with its operators, Hamiltonian, etc. It's just that these operators cannot be supported by a manifold structure. They exist as operators in a different space, but they fail to be supported on a metric manifold structure when you consider very big distances. Now, is there any principle that can guide us in this stuff? So, I'm going to talk about this ultrasound equivalence principle and the strategy that I want to follow. Then I'm going to do it concretely and consider the Robinson Wolf universe, consider the local field operators in one point, like here, and then connect it to the global field operators and modify the global field operators. Now, with the modified field operators, I'm going to have a look at the global picture, because with the modified field operators, I can define a translation operator that allows me to move in this space-time, and define field, local fields also as well where from here. So this is the look at the global picture. And then I will talk about some cosmological consequences of this model. Now, let's see the ultrasound equivalence principle. Let's start from the equivalence principle first. So it is amusing, I think, that before any attempt of IR modification, gravity is already an infrared effect. So among all the possible visions that one may have about general relativistic physics, this is the one that I want to emphasize now. So the essence of the equivalence principle said is that if you are inside a sufficiently small Fourier system, then you're not going to see the effect of gravity. So in order to see gravity, you have to look outside the free falling elevator. Now, how this is encoded in a theory we all know, it's beautifully encoded in GR. So by making the physical space curved, JR on the one hand describes gravity, on the other hand makes the smallest systems free of classical gravitational effects, because every small system is approximately flat in the vicinity of this point. But again, it is nice to say that, to note, I think, that if you want to see gravity as a breakdown of non-gravitational physics, so if you want to see GR as a breakdown of non-gravitational, as an IR breakdown of non-gravitational physics, well, this breakdown happens at the scale of the curve, so it's not a parameter that you put in by. So just to fix the ideas, if you consider the area of a sphere, operator D, well, it will start out growing like the usual flat space expectation, and then it will get corrections of order of some Q-Lasso scalar times the area itself. Great, okay. So now, what happened after the development of quantum theory? So if you quantize the field on a pure background, they are sensitive to the global properties of space-time. So somehow the global properties of space-time hit back on your free-falling Heavy elevator, and as a result, you should see particle production inside your free-falling system. Now I understand that the happiness or sadness of my observer here is not a very trustable physical principle, but still I think it's interesting to explore a different direction. So historically there was GR, and you quantize the field on top of the cube manifold, and you see particle production. So what happens if we try to improve the equivalence principle, to upgrade the equivalence principle, and just postulate that I don't want to see any effect of gravity, not even in the semi-classical level inside of my performance system. So I will postulate that there exists a state that is experienced as empty of particle by each performing observer. Okay.
Excuse me, there's an ambiguity there. Is that a single state which is experienced as empty by particles by all free-falling observers,
yes,
or each free-falling observer has a state by which?
No. There is a state which is experienced as free particles by each free-falling observer. Yeah.
Up to terms of order of the curvature.
So what I'm going to focus on is the energy momentum tensor calculated at this point, let's say here. I don't want to touch other part of the server. So this is a local field operator, and I want it to be, it's very my expectation value, I want it to be, well, we see, but not time dependent, let's say. I'm maybe to have a quartic divergence there, but I don't want time dependence there.
How does the energy momentum tensor, the point, know whether it corresponds to a measurement made by an accelerated or a freely falling observer?
I'm not talking about accelerated observers here. I'm
but since it's a tensor, how does it know whether it's answering the question about a free falling observer?
It doesn't know. I ask more about that. No, it's a. This is. You're perfectly right. When I contract a tensor with a. I get contract potential with a velocity, so it is a puzzling that an accelerated observer sees something, because locally what you are contracting is with the velocity, and the velocity doesn't know about the acceleration. So, but this is not what I'm talking about here. So, okay, what do we want to get rid of? So. In a homogeneous universe, if you calculate the Baryon stress intensity tensor, you do find a structure like this. So you have a quantic divergence which is time independent, and then you have other divergences, quadratic, logarithmic, etc. Now, the usual law is the following. You want to renormalize and make sense of this quantity. So you want to isolate the local terms inside here. And these local terms, you can subtract them by gravitational counter terms. So typically, cosmological constant, the Newton constant, and another high order operators here. And then, of course, you will have non-local contributions that are telling you the effective particle content of the vacuum, right? So once you subtract and renormalize the stress energy tensor, you see that you have unavoidable terms, and usually unavoidable terms that are there. Now, so I want to relate this equivalence principle also to the cosmological constant problem. So one possibility would be, okay, I first renormalize the stress tensor, and then I try to subtract the non-local terms that use particles. Now I would like instead to be more brutal than this, and just try to subtract all these terms. So I'm just saying that in the IR completed theory, these terms are not there. So imagine that they're not. So you may say, okay, but the cosmological constant probably is precisely this term. Well, this is true, but this term alone, like in flat space, is harmless, because in flat space you have a very definite prescription, which is a normal ordering, and you can live with these infinities, and they're harmless, I think. The problem is more, so in this view, the problem is more with this term, because this term makes a normal ordering prescription impossible, because if you find normal order at some time, you will have divergences at another time. So you need to renormalize the stress tensor. Now, once you renormalize the stress tensor, then you have to face the fine-tuning problem in the etc. So what I'm really trying to do is postulate that, more specifically, postulate that in the complete theory, these terms are not there. And so I'm not saying that this solves the cosmological constant problem. So this would be the cosmological constant problem at the level of semi-classical gravity. So I'm not addressing the quantized field. So I think at the level of semi-classical gravity, if you didn't have those terms, you would be slightly happier. So at least this is how I'd to stop worrying. Yeah, so more precisely what I'm saying is, so the way to realize the equivalence principle in practice is to postulate that in the full IR computer theory, these terms just do not exist. And all the rest of my talk will be devoted to trying to subtract this term in any front. Now, so first of all, few comments. So it is arguable that, in general, it is intuitive that since the particle production is really sensitive to the global properties of space-time, it is arguable that by changing the global properties of space-time, you can somehow get rid of this effect. But more specifically here, you see that these terms are infrared with respect to this. So the hope is that I can change the usual framework in the infrared and get rid of this term, because these are infrared with respect to this.
But those terms are not really a problem. Because they're actually comparable to what we have there.
Well, this is the version, for instance, so it needs to be renormalized.
But even if you put the cutoff about the Planck mass, it's comparable to the mean density of the universe. So.
Precise. So this is very interesting. This is my third point. So the usual treatment, so the cosmological constant problem, I think if you erase those terms, it would be.
The problem is the zero-point vacuum energy, which is quantity.
Yeah.
How do you get rid of that?
I'm not going to let you know that.
You can't get rid of it as a gravitational field unless you have some symmetry principles.
Yeah, I'm not going to get rid of that. I'm arguing that if it's only for that term, it's slightly better, because that term is already present in flat space, and you have a very definite prescription that you can like it or not, but you have a very definite prescription to get rid of normal ordering.
Flat space is not a problem, it's when you weigh the hydrogen atoms in the gravitational field.
Now I'm talking about semi-classical drives.
It's one of those principles.
Yeah.
But this is the whole problem.
Now I'm talking about semi-classical gravity, and I'm arguing that in semi-classical gravity, the cosmological constant problem is this. So it's the fact that I need to renormalize the stress tensor, and in order to renormalize it, I need an extreme fine-tuning for this term. If the theory itself renormalizes the stress tensor by itself, leaving only this term, which is part of the universe, but it doesn't contain, just doesn't contain this term, I think that the cosmological constant problem itself is reduced to a normal ordering.
No, but you can normal order the gravitational field.
I'm not talking about the gravitational field. The gravitational field is a manifold. For me, it's a classical manifold. I'm in the regime of semi-classical gravity. So I have quantized matter fields on top of a Q manifold.
Federico, I'm trying to understand in a broader sense what you're doing. So tell me where you disagree with me. Okay. In Minkowskian space quantum field theory, there's an operator algebra, and there's the definition of the Hilbert space, which can be constructed from a definition of the vacuum state. There's an invariance group on Minkowski space, which is the Lorentz group, or the Poincaré group, And you can demand that the vacuum state is Poincaré invariant, and that gives you a unique construction of the quantum field theory up to gauge invariance issues. In a generic curved space-time, there are no symmetries, there are no killing fields, either time-like or any, and therefore there's a formal operator algebra, but you can't complete the definition of the quantum field theory by giving a, there's no principle that tells you how to define the Hilbert space, or equivalently, there's no symmetry principle that tells you how to define a vacuum state from which to construct the excitations.
No, there is.
Okay, so your claim is that the equivalence principle suitably interpreted is a principle to define what is the Hilbert space that the operator algebra of a quantum field theory answer.
Yeah, because there must be a state, the vacuum, on top of which I can construct my algebra.
But now let's look back at Minkowski space-time. I mean, in Minkowski space-time, the vacuum state is not invariant under accelerations, rotations, etc. It happens to exist because there's this, you know, preferred class of inertial observers which are related to each other by the Poincaré group. You have none of that structure so you're claiming, in spite of having none of that structure, there's still going to be a principle that picks out a unique quantum field theory.
So that's a very good question, I think, and this structure here holds only just because I assumed to work in a space like a Friedman-Wilson worker that is homogeneous. So this expansion in K, strictly speaking, and the fact that these terms are just time dependent and not space time dependent are just because I'm assuming this symmetry. Now, I don't know how this principle extends in other space time, but I mean, it works. It has to, and I don't even know how to. I mean, literally expanding around a given space time with many symmetries.
But no
just
time,
because,
no time like killing fields. So.
No time like killing
that's
fields.
That's
no.
The case you're working. So you're working a case with homogeneity, but no time like killing fields, and you claim that there is a unique construction of a quantum field theory nonetheless. That's what you have to show.
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to show is just how to reabsorb this term, actually. So I couldn't work out all the long delays. The process is really, let's say I want to discover general relativity from scratch. What I may try to do, if it's not clear enough, is I try to expand the metric in Riemann normal coordinates. So, and I give you the first order correction to the flat metric. This is what I'm trying to do here. So I start from a Friedman-Wilson space, and I give you the first order correction that gets rid of this piece. I don't know about the others.
So here's a question. If you follow that analogy, you would end up setting the tidal forces all to zero because they're the analogous terms that appear when you try to generalize Newtonian mechanics on a curved space-time, and you would get the wrong physics.
No, you will see that you will have a universe with a locally defined expansion rate, et cetera, but not that. And actually, what I wanted to point out is that, the last thing is that it's not, so usually this term is just renormalized by a local counter term. It's interesting to try to renormalize it in the infrared with another procedure, because it is on the right side, as Nyash was saying, to give interesting cosmological implications. Because roughly this is the critical density.
Just a small question.
Yeah.
When you say normal order, do you mean that literally, or do you mean some generalization? As far as I know, normal order works for free fields, but it's not going to work for directing fields, which you presumably are including.
I mean, I'd be even happy, this is a constant in time. I think even a procedure of this type, take the infinite constant and throw it away, would be well defined. As long as it is a constant. So, as you say, in the general case, normal order won't work, but it is a constant piece. The one that you have to subtract is a constant piece, and you have a definite procedure to subtract it. If it's not a constant, then you have to renormalize the stress terms. Okay, so briefly, let me make a connection with some of my previous work. That we're basically trying to emphasize the double structure that you have. So in the standard framework of semi-classical gravity, you isolate a region of space at a given time, so like this room now. And this has two complementary restrictions. So from the point of view of GR, of the background, this is a subnetto, essentially a subsystem. From the point of view of the quantized metal field, this is a subsystem. And as our friends working in quantum information know very well, this is a much more general structure than this. So my argument was that, okay, there is a one-to-one correspondence, really a one-to-one correspondence in the usual case, but perhaps one may want to consider this description because it's more general. So you may think that this description might break down at some scales, but this description may hold at the same scales. So now I'm arguing that this description breaks down on the larger scales instead of the in the UV. So break down in the IR. So how is this corresponding then actually put up concretely? Well, it is given once and for all why you give a set of global operators. So once you give a set of global operators, these are labeled with the manifold, but are operators on the UV space. So you can take some integrals of these local operators. This is still an operator of your quantum field theory. And of course, it is an integral on a manifold, but acts on the QFT in the space. And it defines the partition, this partition here at the quantum level, just because this operator acts trivially, so as the identity of all the rest. And acts non-trivially only on the on the subsystem that corresponds to your Hermitian space. Now, again, this is all basically useless if you stick with the semi-classical gravity, because this correspondence is always there. So it is a one-to-one corresponder, and it's much easier to just consider the manifold description. It's easier. Now, as a rule of thumb, I'm trying to mimic GR, where non-extensive gravity, like the area of a sphere that we considered before, start out as in first space, but receive correction over the curvature. Here I'm saying that also extensive quantities like this receive corrections over the curvature. So, otherwise stated, I'm saying that any region of space at a given time is still a perfectly defined quantum subsystem. But the corresponding operator cannot be written as an integral of this type of local operators. If you try to write this operator as this integral, you are making a mistake of this order of magnitude. Of course, this holds still in the limit of this is still in the limit of zero curvature. So the limit of this modification, the zero curvature limit of this modification is GR, but is also in the cost of space automatically. Modifying the Fourier modes. So the idea is try to preserve the physics as we know at some point. So I'm considering a flat Feynman-Robertson Wolke universe. So the field operators in the Heisenberg picture we satisfy precisely the same equations. I ask you. So now I'm not talking about global space, but I need a chart big enough to define derivatives, spatial derivatives of the field, right? And as usual, you can define a local Hamiltonian density. You can take this as a definition of the expansion, right? So you don't have a globally defined expansion, but you may think that this defines at the operator level locally your expansion. Now, and you can try to introduce global operators in this way. So these are just by definition your annihilators and creators. So this is the basic answer that I'm doing. So since the commutator of this operator is proportional to the volume, and know that the quantities proportional to the volume are allowed to get a correction over the curvature. So actually, this is the answer is related to the extrinsic curvature. And this is an order one number, hopefully an order one number that we are going to derive with the ultrasound experience. So now it goes with E. So now we consider a universe with any equation of state. So it's got, with respect to the conformal time, it's got this history. And then you can choose a zero mode function, which are solutions of the mode function, this one. So the mechanism is very simple. You see that you can calculate T00 here. So this comes from the usual calculation. This expansion at IK comes from the usual calculation. And you see that the prescription for the commutator works for any equation of state as long as you choose gamma equals 1/2. So from now on, gamma is equal 1/2. And again, I don't have a parameter that set to zero goes back to zero. Either is that better or it's not, in a way. Look at the global picture. So this modification can be expressed with modified mutation relation or alternatively with a modified dispersion relation. The latter are easier to treat with. In order to move around in this space, I need a translation operator. Because there will be, since I'm supposing that there is a homogeneity, there will be a translation operator that, by exponentiation, gives me the local fields defined at other point. So let me just change the levels here. So these levels n are just the old K, now called the N, and now the Fourier co-moving manifold levels. Okay? Now, if you look at the modified commutation relations here, you will see very easily that by a definition of these fields, you can obtain the usual commutation relation. So you just define this by the square root of this guy here. So this is what you can do. So you will define that. I call them the manifold operator because they satisfy the usual commutation relations like this. And in terms of this operator, so the same momentum operator gets a factor like this times the usual manifold operator. Now, this is your new momentum. It really means that whenever you want to describe an infinitesimal translation, this is the quantity that you have to pick out of the exponential in the Fourier expansion. So I wrote this operator in this way, and K is really the physical commuting momentum associated to infinitesimal translation. Now, to summarize, the way of seeing this modification, we modify the special relation is the following. You have suppose manifold Fourier modes, so the ones that are untouched by this modification, and so they are conserved during the evolution. So it means that the commuting version of them is conserved. So this is actually the commuting version of them, and the Fourier space is flat in these levels. It means that every Fourier integration that you do, it will contain the 3n in it, right? Then you have the physical commuting momenta, which are now slightly time dependent, and are given by this equation. So now, the first cosmological implication is the following: is that these are the conserved quantities; these are not. So if you re-express this quantity in terms of these up to higher orders, you will get that the physical commuting momenta are conserved only when they are very extremely well. If they have a small wavelength compared to Hubble, but in general they are not conserved. So this is the first cosmological implication. Let's really try to explore this space-time. So I exponentially, I'm saying that by the so I'm assuming that there is a homogeneity. So I can build a translation operator just by exponentiating that operator, this operator, and here is the field phi at another place. So here, what it really means, you see, so I'm just taking a parameter lambda here. Well, it really means that it is a, this is a, the field operator defined at the commuting distance lambda, and this commuting distance is made by all the infinitesimal steps that takes to go from zero to here. Okay. Now, since I'm dealing in this particular case, I'm dealing with an homogeneous universe. The transition group is abelian. Well, it's in fact. So the transition group is abelian, and I can actually write down the field in this way. Well, now keep in mind that these are time dependent terms. So this is basically given in the previous slides. Now, of course, the actual expression of this operator I'm just able to write down the first order correction to this operator. So I shouldn't trust it for too much. So this is just the first order correction to the normal general relativity case. Okay.
What is psi n t?
Yeah, psi n t is just the mode function that multiplies a
what?
I introduced it here, yeah. So I introduced it here. So I just write down, I just write down formally this expression. This exponent here, so up to now, so now it was just the field in zero. So this exponent was just useful to take derivatives. Why you take a derivative, a factor of k drops? This is all I mean with this exponent, right? But it also has to calculate, it always has to be calculated in zero. So let's see what happens if you calculate the commutator. Now, you take the conjugate momentum to the field in zero, and you calculate the commutator. You will expand. You will expand this exponent by writing k as n times one plus corrections, and by that you will find this correction to the commutator to the commutator relation between to the canonical commutation relations. Now we recover the expected pattern. So this is a density. Whenever we integrate this density, we have one plus order volume, volume to the 3/2 times the curvature. This is the expected pattern. Now, the way I interpret this is that I shouldn't take lambda as an integration variable. Lambda is a parameter of a symmetry group. If I try to use it as an integration variable, I'm making a mistake of this order, because I'm not on a manifold express. What about the derivatives? Here is the crucial point. If you calculate the derivative, you have a possible ambiguity, because if you derive phi in zero and then you translate, you may get another answer from translate first phi and derive it when it's far away, right? So in particular, if you translate phi and derive it when it's far away, you have this spurious contribution that comes from the fact that you are actually deriving this term, but this term contains a time dependence to k. Now, all the most important cosmological implications that I'm gonna find out comes out from the cancellation of this spurious term. So how does this spurious term come out? For instance, it comes out because if you, instead of calculating the commutator between pi and phi, you calculate phi and pi, you get this spurious contribution, always from the fact that k depends on time. Now, you can get rid. So you can express this integral at time moment at small distances in this way, and you can get rid in this limit. So you can get rid of the first order of approximation of this quantity if you If you are, if you say that lambda itself, which is the moving distance, varies with time. So if lambda doesn't vary with time, you're screwed, because you have a pure response. If lambda varies with time slightly, then you are not. So the answer is this one. So you are, I just write down an answer. Beta is a number, or the one again. And with these assets, you can plug in this and find out that this integral is zero if beta is equal to 1/4. So what I'm saying is only that when I foliate space-time, and I'm saying that from zero, I'm distant lambda here, whenever I calculate the derivative of this commuting observer here, I shouldn't reconsider phi at the same lambda, because otherwise I'm screwed. I should reconsider phi at the slightly different lambda here. Okay? And this lambda changes. And again, you can see that it's about those scales. This is a completely irrelevant effect, right? Deeply inside the Abel scale, this is a completely irrelevant effect. But it will have effect at the Abel scales. So, cosmological implications. So the commuting distance between two commuting observers. So I have in this case I have an expansion rate which applies locally everywhere. It means that two commuting observers very close to each other, in the limit where when they are very close to each other, this quantity here is zero. So the derivative of lambda is zero. But it actually contains a correction when I start considering observers which are far away from each other. And this correction is given here. So there are, again, there are no parameters. These are the parameters that you have to put in if you want to apply the ultrasonic to your experience. In other words, the proper distance, which is just A times lambda, scales not just as the ratio of the scale factor, but it receives a correction here, which again is very small in the limit when this distance is small compared to Hubble. Now, cosmology. Let's try to do some cosmology. So, the trajectory of a light ray gets modified by this. So, now we have an effect that is always there, at the order of Hubble. Okay? So, whenever two observers are under Hubble, they are commuting, but they just don't, but their distance just doesn't grow as we thought it did. So we get a correction from the light trajectory. So this is the usual piece here. So this is the commuting distance and conformal time. This is the correction that you're having because of this effect. Again, this correction is absolutely small in the limit when the light ray is very close to us. So in a metal-dominated universe, so now we specialize in a metal-dominated universe, and since if this goes in the right direction to perhaps explain acceleration. So in a metal-dominated universe, the luminosity distance is like this, and I just here I just wrote this equation specializing to the metal-dominated case and to Z. So finally. Okay, so finally, so I don't have parameters to fit, so this is the here, okay? So there is no other, I'm stuck with this here, at least if I consider a metal-dominated universe. So it's nice to play around a little bit. So I haven't fit the supernova, but I can tell you, so I can tell you how this here relates to the usual case where this effect is not present. So for instance, if you take a metal-dominated universe, this is the effect that you have. So now we are here. So for a flat universe, it gets a bit better. So in my model, I'm sticking with the flat universe. While here, I will also allow to compare it to the luminosity distance obtained inside the cured Feynman Robertson work. Yeah? So yeah, but there is some discrepancy. I don't know how serious is this discrepancy. But things go better, slightly better if I compare it with what happens here inside of this. So now this is included by CMB. But it's those that then you have this runaway behavior. Now, the point is that I don't know how far I can trust this cure, because what I wrote is just the first order correction to the method of the case. And I don't know when the next order correction will become important. So I would like to say that I can trust it up to here. But I don't know. So yeah, some conclusion. So what I like about this model is that it doesn't contain any parameters. So either it's GR or it's X. If it makes sense, which is not completely trivial. And in fact, so I think this is a genuinely new kind of framework, which I find it very, very exciting. But it's also worrying because, of course, whenever you explore in new directions, it's risking. Perhaps there are some inconsistencies in the C or some other basic test which I didn't consider. So there are much more. There is much more to understand and double check. But I think there are already some promising cosmological implications of this model. Thank you.
Rafael wants to ask a question.
Not in my response.
Okay, I have a question. So what you the comparison to the data was that you were the solid line was omega matter equals one with your modification.
Yeah.
So you're in the dashed lines are all that are standard GR with different constituents.
No, lambda CM, right. But with different omega M and omega lambda. So and I also rescaled the Abel constant. So this is a potential problem of this mechanism.
How much do you have to rescale?
So the Abel constant, it's about 0.8 smaller. So it's
80% of the regular volume.
No.
Sorry.
Wait, it's like.
So it's like if it's 50.
Like 50.
Yeah. The point is that now I don't know if it's smaller because the Abel constant is complete.
When people usually quote H, that's in units of H to 100. So it's 0.8.
No, sorry. So no, it's a instead of being 100, it's 50. Or H, small H is small H is 0.5.
So it's 20% smaller.
Yeah, something like this. But okay, so this is if I want to mess these two cures like this.
Right.
But then there is the magnitude, the absolute magnitude of the supernova, which I don't know how.
Right. I mean, just Hubble. I mean, the Hubble space, Hubble Keeper is. No.
So, great. So, either I'm out completely of age, or perhaps you can do something about the magnitude of the supernova. I don't know how much I can change the magnitude, the absolute magnitude of the supernova. I just know that it's just a completely. But the best fit is really this.
Right, but I mean, it would be like, I was just going to say that it seems to me that the problem is that here isn't. I mean, matching that line isn't such a relevant thing because the error bars could grow further out. So as long as it's close, it's the all the interesting stuff happens around 0.5.
There are some bunch here, right?
But the error bars are pretty are biggish. I think my biggest concern would be right at the very 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 bottom of the curve, like what at zero at z.
Right here
at like zero where we have Cepheid variables.
Precisely. So in order to match it here, so this is an effect that kicks in at third order in the distance, third order in the direction. So in order to match it at redshift order one. I have to be slightly higher at the lower redshift. And this means that also my Abel constant should be slightly smaller. Yeah, this is a possible.
So another question? Basically, this is a question that I didn't understand certain things. So first of all, were you constructing an alternative quantum field theory, or you're taking steps towards constructing? I mean, you wrote down some operators, but you didn't write down, for example, Hamiltonian, or you didn't write down some field equations for the operators. So
Is that just, did you just show it to us, or that remains to be done? What's the status of this theory?
So what remains to be done, absolutely what remains to be done is the complete IR. So it's the IR completion of this theory in the general case. I have no idea. I have no idea. What I try to do is taking the same classical gravity for some specific case, flat Friedman-Robertson worker, take all the operators that I have in a Friedman-Robertson worker, and make a Taylor expansion around this case, and finding the first order correction. So the first order correction are better seen as modifications of the dispersion relations, as I showed. The Hamiltonian, I can work out a global Hamiltonian, and the first order correction would be global Hamiltonian. Basically, instead of n, integral of n, an, an, I will have k. This is the sort of, because k takes the place of n.
So this will now be a non-local filter of some sort.
A?
Non-local filter of some sort.
So?
Because you have commutated, it's not vanishing.
So, if you force it on a manifold, it's showing non-local. Here, I'm trying to preserve local physics at the point that I don't even want the non-local effects that come from gravity. So, I'm trying to be ultra-local. I'm trying to say, I want to be able to do local physics in my free-falling elevator, at the point that I don't even want those effects that come from global properties of space.
So the other question is, what does this have to do with the equivalence principle? I completely missed that. With that choice of the commutator forced on you by your equivalence principle?
Yeah, so I more precisely, I was saying this. So I conjecture that in the full IR completed theory, these terms just don't exist. So when I calculate the stress energy tensor here, I will have this quantity divergence, and this is it.
I think
we should move on, actually.
Sadly, could you
sort of back that again?